This is a new voice for a new Scotland.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the TNT show, The Nation Talks. You know, it's been another great day for British democracy. Boris Johnson has fired the top civil servant and appointed a Brexit negotiator in his place. He has located this new guy in the House of Lords as a national security advisor. Now, we gather this nice man will not be a civil servant, but he can order civil servants around. He won't be a special advisor either, but he will make laws that govern you and me. Now, this could only happen in a country without a written constitution. And to top it all, Boris Johnson has said today that the Scottish border does not exist, which must be a shock for all the people who live in the Scottish borders area. And as my good friend Roger Mullen points out, it's very awkward to see how you can have no border but English votes for English laws. But there you are. That's what Boris Johnson thinks. Hi, I'm John Drummond, and I'm your host for the next 60 exciting minutes. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. We have yet another great guest tonight, and I'm really excited that she's able to be with us. Stay tuned for her amazing story and hear all about the Orkney news. But first, just a few words about TNT, The Nation Talks. This is about you, as much as guests and as much as about me as the interviews. This is, many respects, your show. We take questions before showtime, and you can also send us your questions live during the show. And we'll try and fit in as many of those as we possibly can. So it's your show. We're here to take your questions and hopefully answer as many as we can. Now, to our guests. Tonight, The Nation talks to Fiona Graham. Fiona created her own newspaper. Now, I suspect many of you listening and watching will be thinking, I'd love to start up my own newspaper. Fiona has the secrets, and you'll learn those tonight. Unlike the so-called mainstream media, she is not afraid to talk truth to power. Indeed, she and two others took on their mendacious local MP, Alistair Campbell. In fact, she is one of the renowned Orkney Four. Fiona joins us tonight from Orkney. How are you, Fiona? How are you coping with the pandemic?
Fine, thank you, and good evening, John, and anybody who's watching. Well, like many people in Scotland, I'm a single person household. So there were points during the lockdown when you were almost engulfed with this feeling of powerlessness. But I was fortunate. I have a garden. I live in a beautiful place. And when you get feelings like that, you just go outside and get yourself away from social media. And that's been good. So I'm looking forward to the easing of lockdown restrictions even more.
Yeah, I mean, it's particularly difficult, as you say. I mean, people like you, I'm like you, I can get out and walk around pretty much whenever I choose. But not everyone is in that position. So many folks are, you know, locked away, maybe with a couple of three kids to look after. They don't have a lot of chance to take a break from the isolation that exists. So hopefully, I agree with you, if we can ease the lockdown a little bit and so people get out and about, I'm sure that's going to be a great thing for everybody. But as you can see, there's been a resurgence of the pandemic in different parts of England. I'm thinking about Leicester and elsewhere. So I think the First Minister's right. I think we have to be very cautious about this and take it a step at a time. Yeah. So tell us about your background, how you got to Orkney, and why you set up the Orkney News.
Well, my parents were very involved with the SNP. We're talking about 1968, and I was a child then, and obviously got involved very actively in politics from that early age. So did all that, university, teaching, ended up in Orkney because at that time, my husband was an expert in tidal energy, the late Professor Ian Bryden. And of course, Orkney is now a leader in world renewables. Then it was just starting out on that. So that's how I ended up in Orkney, where I became a teacher here as well, and was a care worker and a guide at a big historic site, and I brought up my family here. So that's why I'm in Orkney, and I've been here for nearly 30 years.
And where did you come from originally?
Well, I was born in Edinburgh, 10 Claremaston Drive, probably going to be a plaque on that door one day. a great place to grow up. Claremaston was fabulous. Grew up there, went to local school and all the rest of it. But like a lot of people, moved around a bit because of employment. So lived in London for a bit, Linlithgow for a bit. So there's still people there I know. And then, of course, up to Orkney. And I've lived in Orkney longer now than anywhere else.
Do you think your accent has changed over that time?
Some people think so.
I'm just asking because I lived in London in Berkshire for 30 years. And I know my accent changed because, you got to communicate, you got to relate to folks around about you, and it does make an impact over time. Tell us about the Orkney News, or maybe you prefer to tell us about the Orkney Four, because I'm thinking about, in chronological order, the Orkney Four happened before the Orkney News, didn't it?
Yeah, the Orkney Four was because of the 2015 general election, when there was an SNP tsunami, and it certainly looked like the SNP were going to do really well. And then Alistair Carmichael, who was the Secretary of State for Scotland at the time, basically was part, well, he published a smear about the First Minister of Scotland. He lied about his involvement in that, covered it up and all the rest of it. People know this story. And four of us in Orkney took him to court because we thought this is not right, and people shouldn't be lying to you. And of course, we won 2 out of 3 points, and he was ordered to pay his own costs. So there was a damning judgment of him. But he's returned. He's still an MP, but his reputation is really in shatters because of his behaviour. But the one thing I would say is I've always had great faith in the people of Scotland and the people who contributed to our crowdfund, because we were just four ordinary folks, and it was mainly small amounts of money that people contributed. And I am ever grateful to what those people did, because they didn't know us. But they agreed with us that what Alistair had done was very, very wrong, and he should be held accountable for it. And, you know, all of that money mostly went to pay the legal fees. There was a little bit left over, and we made donations to food banks in Orkney and Shetland, because, like everywhere else, unfortunately, our islands have food banks, and the use of them has grown incredibly, particularly over this pandemic as well. So that's where any little leftover money went from that crowdfund. But many thanks to the people that backed us and had faith in what we were doing.
I mean, that's a very heartening story, because you went out on a limb, didn't you? I mean, had that money not come through, I guess you could have been in straitened circumstances, perhaps.
It was one of the questions lawyers kept asking, will you have enough money? And I just said, our supporters will back us. I just had great faith, and I still do, in what the people of Scotland will do. I have great faith in them, and I always feel that way.
And you were vindicated, because if I recall, the judge was hugely unimpressed by Carmichael's evidence.
Yeah, I mean, what was difficult at the time was most of the media told his story. And the only media we got a fair hearing when was the National and Independence Live, actually. They were the only two that sort of told our story. And unfortunately, we weren't able to get a broadcast done of him doing his evidence. But I think if people had seen that, a lot of veils would have been lifted from even his supporters' eyes.
Yeah. Do you think maybe that the present level of, dare I call it, terminological inexactitude that we hear from the present government stems back to his behaviour?
It's all a culture of the, well, it's now, it's not illegal to tell a lie if it is a political lie. So people like Boris Johnson can do it. And it's part of the culture, and the judge went into that in some detail in her notes about the judgment she made, and that there's a huge moral dilemma there, really. Well, it's not a dilemma at all. It's, you know, we are represented by people who tell lies to get into power.
I mean, I can't think there's much doubt about that. And I agree with your point too. It may not be illegal, it may be allowed in law, but it's certainly not allowable in the sense, in the moral sense.
No.
Because it's hugely corrosive. If people lie all the time, it does nothing for social cohesion.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what the judge said as well, that it may not be illegal, but it's immoral, you know. Yeah. And the thing is, they take an oath of conduct as well when they become MPs and ministers. But yeah, worthless.
Yeah, because codes of conduct are only as good as the arrangements in place to enforce their requirements. If there's no compliance, then effectively the code of conduct is ineffective and almost invalid, in the sense that it has no validity. It's merely public relations, which is very sad, because I don't think you can conduct a nation's business on public relations. I think that's what we're seeing just now in many respects. So tell us about Orkney News. What inspired you to do it, and what made you think you could carry it off? I mean, because many others have tried and failed.
Well, here's the main point. It's not just me. There are five directors, and there's a whole host of contributors. Everybody is a volunteer. And we've been on the go now for 3 years. What happened was, there's just a growing feeling that not all news was getting reported. It was maybe not getting reported particularly factually. And that there were a whole host of viewpoints in the island not getting published. So minority views, people that didn't kowtow to the establishment, if you like. So we went live on February 1st, 2017, and then 6 months later we became an incorporated not-for-profit company. We're community-based. We're all online. Anybody that looks at what we do will see that we're free to view. That's really important. We've got a huge variety of things there. So there's factual articles. You can click on links just to check to make sure what we're seeing is accurate. We make it easier for people to take part in consultations, be it local government ones or Scottish government ones or Scottish Parliament ones. So they just have to do one click and they can get through to whatever consultation it is. So we try and help with that. And then we have lots of other things, because it shouldn't just be about politics. It needs to be about your whole culture. So there's lots of book reviews and gaming reviews, just people sharing their opinions on a whole wide variety of things. Helen Armitt does incredible recipes, so that you'll see them on our YouTube channel. It was important when we set up, this was one of our main things, that we were aware creating family meals was quite difficult for people on a low budget. So Helen has gone out her way to create these easy to follow recipes that people can make using quite economical ingredients. So basically that's it, that's what we do.
And tell me about, I accepted it wasn't a one-woman band, and there are a number of you who put all this together. But you, when you started it off, you must have been, I mean, I assume you didn't have any experience of running a newspaper.
No, but...
Starting from scratch.
Yeah, we're quite learners. And what we did when we set it up is we had a wee practice, like, you know, on a private site, we practiced away. And then we thought, yeah, we're good to go. We'll just go for it, for the 1st of February. So that's when we went live.
This was 2017, is that right?
2017, yeah. And yep, it's grown since then. And we went to, Helen and I went to a training session with Bill Shepherd from The Guardian, who's a top photographer there. And he was doing a little course, and it was free, on mobile journalism. And he showed you how to, you know, create film just using a mobile phone. And he was great. So we used all that knowledge. So any free types of training sessions or even cheap ones that come up, we go on them. And as I say, we learn. Anybody can do this sort of thing. I mean, if we can do it, anybody can do it, quite honestly. But it does take a lot of work. So you need the team.
And would you be willing to help others? If, say, for example, there's somebody watching or listening tonight and thinks, you know something, I'd love to be able to do that. I don't have the confidence. Would you be willing to sort of take a phone call or two from folks?
Yeah, but, you know, I was inspired by Independence Live because, you know, their motto, be the media. And we thought, look, we're not happy with the media we've got at the moment that was happening in Orkney 3 years ago. Let's do what Independence Live, we'll be the media. So we took our cue from you guys. And the thing is, but yeah, it's dead easy for folk to do, set up a website. But as I say, you need a team. You can't, if you try and do it on your own, it's just too much. And you're, then you're only getting one voice coming through.
When I look at Orkney News, one of the things that impressed me as a marketing person is you've got advertising.
Yeah.
You're defraying your costs with advertising. A lot of people who've tried this, I think, often find that a stumbling block. They think, how do I get advertising? Because if I don't get advertising, how do I defray the cost of the exercise?
Well, look, funding is a huge issue. We have adverts that are generated by our WordPress site because we use WordPress. And there's adverts generated by them, but I've limited where they go because I hate when you're reading something and an advert dances across. Right? I hate that. So that doesn't happen to us. So we limit the adverts, but we also get people send adverts to us. Mm-hmm. And we're careful where we locate those because what we want to do is convey news or views, right? That's what we're there for. But funding is a big, big issue. We did get £1,000 from Tesco's, you know, their bags for help. And with that, we were able to buy little bits of mobile equipment.
Yeah.
My goodness, it's sunny in Orkney. So the thing is also we keep our costs really, really low.
Yeah.
Now, you can do that with online. You know, if we were to print stuff out, that would take up a huge amount of time, yeah, and money, distribution, yeah, costs, all of that. Now, there are people we won't reach because we're online, but there's also a wider world out there that we do reach. And yeah, we have a lot of followers in the United States of America, Canada, Australia. And then depending on an article, we'll get followers from Slovakia or Poland or, you know, EU states. So really, once you're online, you've got not just your local audience, which is our prime focus, the, yeah. the islands of Orkney, but you've got a worldwide audience too.
People need to get, numbers are a great way of reflecting how successful you've been. I know you want to be very modest about this, and I applaud you for it. But the fact of the matter is, you have been successful. People, listen to these numbers, folks. When you started back in 2017, you had 197,000 views, roughly. This year, up to the 28th of June, you've had 337,191.
It's grown incredibly since lockdown. When that happened, you can see our figures just surged because obviously people were going online for news. And maybe they were used to buying a newspaper or whatever. And now they were stuck in the house. So they were going online and they were finding us because we use hashtags and social media as best we can to increase our readership.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because I gather you've got over 4,000 followers on Facebook. You've got over 2,000 followers on Twitter. And 500 and odd subscribers on YouTube, together with 149 folks who are followers on Instagram. This is a success. I mean, there's no question about it. You have an offering that people like to read and consume. If somebody wants to be a subscriber, is there information on the Orkney News that enables them to subscribe?
Yeah, you just click a button on it. They'll see that, you know. Follower, or whatever. What's important is that we didn't ever try and compete with anyone. We don't try and be big or anything like that. We just do our own thing. So we've sort of carved out our own wee niche.
Yeah.
And all these people that weren't being catered for, they're, if you like, minority opinions, well, they amount up to quite a lot of people.
Yeah.
So if you take like our audiobook reviews, there's a lot of people who, for whatever reason, cannot access a book to read it physically.
Yeah.
Right. So we have an audiobook review thing that encourages them to, well, try this book out or whatever. And these are all like, maybe reviews that you wouldn't normally read as well. So we've got stuff in there about Warhammer and that side of things. And same with our gaming articles, you know, retro games and sci-fi and all that. So these are little niches, but they're important niches.
There's no question. If people come back and come back and come back, you know that you're appealing. And what you're doing is resonating with folks. We've had a bunch of questions come in, Fiona. One I think we dealt with in my introductory remarks about no border between Scotland and England. And there's one that I wanted to save for later, but I think we should... Well, let me deal with the second one first. People are saying the Orkney News viewer figures are amazing. Can you give Indie Live Radio some hints about growing its listener base?
It's just about having that variety of voices, which I think you're doing more and more now, so, because that's what we do. And nobody wants wall-to-wall politics, quite honestly. And in my head, you see, Scotland is an independent nation. And when you think like that, and if you think with confidence about Scotland, you can then reflect its culture. And we have such a diverse and fabulous culture to draw upon. And so go for that. Go for all these different ideas and viewpoints out there.
That sounds good advice. So Andrew Gordon asked us a question about the border, but I think we'll leave that for a little bit, if you don't mind, because we dealt with it at the beginning. But we could well come back to it, Andrew. On YouTube, someone describing themselves as raised beds, it says, why do the SNP have such a difficult time trying to win over Orkney and Shetland?
Well, yeah, I wish I had knew the answer to that one. The thing is, the vote has been increasing. And now, I can't speak for Shetland. I wouldn't dare to. But certainly in Orkney, the SNP, now I'm not a member of the SNP, but they have certainly by far the largest membership of any political party. I would say the Liberal Democrats do not have many activists. What they do have in Orkney, and I would think it's the same in Shetland, is an excellent campaign team, and they're very, very good at getting out press releases, at jumping on issues, if you like, particularly local ones, and using those. So all of that is important, as you know, you've got all the tradition of them being in power for over 50 years in the islands. But what 2015 did show was that vote can crumble, because Denis Skeen got a tremendous vote for the SNP, and nobody would ever have thought that would have happened. Now, yes, at the next election, it went back, but that's just an indication that Lib Dem vote isn't as solid as people maybe think. So there's always that to build on.
So do you reckon that the Lib Dem vote is sort of traditional? Because you describe a Lib Dem machine that doesn't appear to function terribly well. I mean, if they don't have a lot of activists and they're not knocking on doors, then they must be relying to a large extent upon inertia.
A lot of it is tradition. It is absolutely tradition that people, we've always voted that way. The Lib Dems have been very successful in promoting the idea that the SNP is a centralist party, and that everything is centralised in Edinburgh. Now, we have an Islands Act, which means our islands, the three island authorities, have actually more power. I mean, it could go much, much further than it does. But certainly that idea of the SNP being centralist and being down in Edinburgh, and yet, you know, they don't seem to have a problem with that when being down in London. So there, that's a kind of odd thing. That's what I mean. It's not always logical. But that's one of the things that Lib Dems successfully play on.
Yeah.
Is this idea that the SNP and their Scottish government, as they call them, are, you know, Edinburgh focused. Even though the islands actually have done better out the Scottish government since it was controlled by the SNP than when it was ever under that coalition, Labour Lib Dem coalition. You know, we didn't do well out of it at all with them.
Now, you said you're not an SNP member, so you're free to say whatever you like here. What could the SNP do that would make an impact on that Lib Dem vote? If you were to name three things that the SNP could or perhaps ought to do.
Well, I'm just going to say that even if I was an SNP member, I would still say what I would say, because that wouldn't have stopped me. It's incredibly difficult because they're up against this tremendous tradition that is here. But obviously, Denis Skeen appealed to people. So I would look at the qualities Denis Skeen had and see, well, what was it about him that people really liked? What was it about that 2015 campaign that people really liked as well? because Orkney did have the highest no vote in 2014. And yet there it was, thousands of people willing to vote SNP, you know, just the next year. Yeah. So I would look at those two things if I was a political organiser in Orkney. I would see what was successful about 2015, what was successful about that particular candidate as well, because that does matter, I would say, still in Orkney and Shetland, the candidate.
Yeah.
So look at those two things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sounds interesting. Is there any way of as the vote there being analysed? I.e., you know, for example, I've done polling on independents, and we always ask people for their demographics, and therefore we can split the data later. So we can say, for example, people over 55 feel this way, but people under 35 feel perhaps differently. Has anyone ever done that for Orkney?
Well, it's quite small numbers, remember, for Orkney. You know, it's a small electorate. But you'd need to get somebody in from the SNP to discuss that from Orkney and Shetland. Okay. I would say that's maybe an idea for another programme.
Okay.
I would say young people are more likely to swing towards the SNP. Not all of them, however. And there's... I've heard in the past bad talk that incomers, like English people, would not vote SNP. Well, that's complete nonsense, right? A lot of the people who have come to Orkney to live because they love the place or to make a living here or whatever, they want that to continue. And they see the mess that's happening with Boris Johnson and whatnot. They also voted, remember, very strongly in Orkney to remain in the EU.
Yeah.
So now we've got an interesting thing coming up, because that's today is the that was the cut-off point for any trade deals. Orkney's a farming community. We produce the finest beef from grass-fed cattle. It's highly intensive in that, you know, you have a lot of fields and only a few cattle. That's the way it works.
Yeah.
And it benefited greatly from EU funding.
Yeah.
And our shellfish industry, there's another fabulous industry, wonderful shellfish. Now, these are all going to suffer greatly with coming out the EU and maybe a potential of a dreadful deal with the states undermining our food standards. So that's something for Orkney folks to think about anyway.
Well, it certainly will have a huge impact. I mean, obviously, not only in Orkney, it'll have a huge impact across Scotland and across the whole of the UK, because in view of the fact that the window has now closed, as you say, as of last night, effectively, we are into a no-deal arrangement, which means that on the 31st of December, I mean, essentially what happens is that the UK falls off a cliff, which will be interesting. We've had a question here from Kevin on Facebook, and he says, how's the tourism industry up north? I mean, leaving aside these trying times, you might want to talk about that. Do you ever get, under normal conditions, a sense of being overwhelmed by the number of people who turn up?
Well, tourism's massive in Orkney, and like this year we would have been getting about 144 cruise ships, and you can imagine they come in and there's thousands upon thousands of visitors come off of those, as well as crew. There's whole flotillas of bus companies that tour them about. There's people, individuals that have tour companies, taxis, all the rest of it. They go out to mainly the big sites, Scarabree, those kind of places that can cater for them. So they do really well out of them. But also important are the individual tourists. A lot of them come for maybe the archaeology, which is outstanding, or the wildlife, also outstanding. And many of those will go to the other islands, because I'm talking to you here from Kirkwall, which is a mainland. But all the islands of Orkney are spectacular. Now, those people, those tourists, they tend to stay for longer because it costs them so much to get here.
Right.
They're very, very valuable because those tourists spend a lot of money. The cruise ships, the money comes in via really marine harbours, you know, costs for tying up and all the rest of that sort of thing. But the Kirkwall does well out the big ships coming in.
Yeah.
It really is a massive, massive industry. And unfortunately, over the years, all funding and all the focus has gone into tourism. And you see, that comes to a head when you get something like a pandemic.
Yeah.
And we have to close it down. Now, a lot of our businesses, therefore, closed up. But a lot of our local shops, our little shops, they kept going and they were doing deliveries to people. You know, the ones on the islands kept going. And they were absolutely terrific. And what would be a terrible shame is when the lockdown sort of eases even more, that people forget about the important role these little businesses and little shops have done, keeping us going.
Yeah.
They were really outstanding, particularly in the first few weeks of lockdown when we have a Tesco here, but people couldn't get anything, you know, like the shelves were stripped bare.
Yeah.
Now we're quite far at the end of the supply chain and we're sort of used to 1 or 2 days without supplies if there's bad weather and a boat doesn't get in.
Yeah.
But this was a long time. You would go into these big stores, Tesco, Lidl, and literally nothing on the shelves.
Yeah.
You know, what folk have done with all the toilet paper, I don't know. Now everything's replenished again. But the wee shops weren't like that, and they were able to go out and do deliveries to people like roundabout where I live, which is in Sandwick. Which is great because we have an aging demographic and therefore there's quite a vulnerable population.
Yes.
Because that's the demographic that was hit the worst by COVID-19. Now, we only had, unfortunately, it's dreadful, but we only had 2 deaths in Orkney. We have 9 confirmed cases. We were really, really lucky, I think, in that. And it's a bit concerning that if there's a sudden influx of people again,
yeah,
if people let their guard down and don't, you know, wear a face covering when they're in a shop or whatever, or forget about being 2 meters away from someone, if an infection was to get back into the islands like that, it could spread really rapidly. You know, yeah. So that is a big concern.
I agree with you. I think it would be hugely unfortunate if local suppliers who've stepped up in a way that so-called larger distributors haven't been able to do, they make these huge stores haven't been able to do quite so well. It'd be unfortunate if those people were then penalised when the large stores get their act together again. The only thought I would make there is that one would expect that Brexit will be a repeat of COVID, but many times worse.
Oh.
For the simple reason that transportation will become an issue, costs will become an issue, and so therefore people might find that local stores continue to be their best option. Because, I mean, if the supermarket shelves empty again, say around about midwinter, which is quite likely to be the case, if there are difficulties with goods coming in from overseas, and I gather that most toilet rolls are produced elsewhere, so we could well see a rerun of the initial stages of the virus. Do you think, I'm not wishing ill on anyone when I say this, but if Alistair Campbell was not a Lib Dem candidate, do you think that would make a big difference to the Lib Dem vote?
Well, it's actually Alistair Carmichael, but
that was a Freudian slip. I meant Alistair Carmichael, yes.
Well, it just shows you what a kind of a bit of impact he's made when people don't even know his name, right? Well, he was always going to stand down, you know, and then of course he didn't. And there they got he got back in. If they replaced him with someone else at the moment, they would win again. Unfortunately, that's the way I see it. But as I say, Dana Skeen, tremendous vote. So there is volatility in that Lib Dem vote that they didn't think was possible. So the SNP, yeah, there's always a chance there, and don't give up from it, because you see, the traditional local paper very much backs the Lib Dems, you know, very much does. On the day Alistair, the judgment was in from that trial, they had a whole front page with his face on it, if you can imagine. And the big banner headline was vindicated, which of course was complete nonsense.
Yeah.
But that's all a lot of people would have seen.
Yeah.
And that image and that headline is all they might have seen, even without buying the newspaper. That's where local press is actually really important. That can give a more balanced viewpoint, if you like.
Yeah. Well, I take it until you set up on the news, there was no alternative.
Well, in the past, there has been, because in the past, like there was the Orkney Herald, and for many, many, many years, I've written about that in iScot magazine. And then more recently, there was Orkney Today. Orkney Today was bought over by the Orkadian. So for quite a wee while now, there was just the Orkadian. And that's never healthy. No. To just have one source of news for people. We don't try and compete with them, as I said before. We don't try and do that. We try and cover different things. There's no point replicating the same story somebody else is doing. If we cover a similar thing, a similar item, it'll probably be done in a different way.
Yeah.
And of course, we reflect different viewpoints. And we leave some things up to them, like we don't cover sheriff court reports and hatches, matches, dispatches, all that kind of thing. They do all that, and you know, they're really good at that. So there's no point us doing that. Why, you know, you don't need to read that twice over. Yeah. So what we do is something different, and we use online media as effectively as we can to do that, so it's a wee bit different. So, you know, with online, you can insert all these links, as I say.
Yeah.
And that gives people, you know, here's a wee bit about something. If you want to find out more, here's the link to it.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't wish to repeat the interview with Richard Walker, who's the editor of the Sunday Herald, but we did talk about the enormous impact of the pandemic on print media. Because, as you say, as you said earlier, it's an expensive business to cut down trees and make pulp and put ink on that paper and distribute it. That's a big ask, and it's not unsurprising that there's been a big impact there. And of course, the traditional response to that is to say, "Well, go and look at our online version," but that means that effectively. That's the market you're already in, as it were. I mean, you've already established a niche in that market, and obviously people like it. So, that, and of course, every newspaper has its online version. And in the case of the Daily Mail, it's much more lucrative. So clearly, online has a real future. I'm not quite so convinced that print newspapers have the same future ahead of them, but who knows? You told me earlier that you've got a Germany-based correspondent for the Orkney News.
Yep, Laura. She's I suppose we could say she's on maternity leave just now. But she wrote some really interesting articles right at the start of the whole Brexity thing about its effect on British nationals, if you like, who lived in the EU.
Yeah.
But we also have in Orkney, Monica, who's a Polish woman who's come to live in Orkney and has settled here, married and has a family, and is now a school teacher, about to start to be one. And she's written for us as well, including a couple of articles in Polish, because Orkney has a significant number of people who live in it who are from Poland. And we thought, well, we need to cater for everybody. As I say, you see all these minorities, all these small groups of people amount to a lot. So, yeah, it gives that extra dimension to a subject when you hear it from a completely different viewpoint. So Laura in Germany was able to tell us what it felt like to be somebody from Britain now living, and she settled there, with family there, and she's got her citizenship there now. But that was quite interesting to hear what it was like, what she was viewing from afar,
mm-hmm.
what was going on here.
I mean, that's interesting. And her view was that it wasn't good.
She's very happy in Germany.
Now, I love your logo, the sort of two-headed dragon. What inspired that?
Well, that's the work of Martin Laird, who's one of our directors and who's an Orkney artist. And I suppose one of the things it's most similar to is the Maze Howe dragon. Anybody who knows about the Maze Howe Neolithic tomb that the Vikings broke into via the roof to take shelter in a storm, searching for treasure, and then carved all these runes and things round the walls, some of which are very interesting, you know, sexual runes. But anyway, one of them was a dragon, although some people have since said it might be a wolf, but we'll go with dragon. And so Martin's design links back to that ancient culture in Orkney, to our roots here. It's forms an O. So for Orkney News, the O of it and everything. And it's just spectacular. It's the two heads talking to each other as well. You can read a lot of things into that. But yeah, that's our design made by, you know, for us by Martin. It's just wonderful.
It is very good. I commend you, because, I mean, very often when you're setting up something from scratch, it's hugely important to get that creative input to it. Because, you know, something, what tends to happen is that when you get a group of people together, I think it was Margaret Mead said, the only thing that changes things in life is when a small group of people get together and decide to make things different. Perhaps I've misquoted her there. But essentially what she's saying is that there is that spark that you get when people who have a shared purpose and also perhaps shared values get together and say, we want to do something. And there's some great stuff comes out of that. I do like the dragon. It's impactive. It's when you look at the logo, it's striking. And
it's also the reason, John, why you need a team and not just like one person doing a thing, because there's strength in diversity and having all these different viewpoints from your team and people saying to you, I don't think that's going to work. Let's try this, you know. So that's why if anybody wants to build an online local paper or anything like that, go for a team, that, you know, get together with a few of you.
And as you said earlier, you'd be willing to help in the
time
you've got available. Well, you know, very often when people are trying something new, you run into a roadblock of some kind, and it's tremendously reassuring to know there's somebody out there that you can get in touch with and say, is this a problem that you encountered? And even if you haven't, what advice could you give us in moving this thing forward? Because I like to feel that some of the people watching and listening to this tonight will be inspired by your example and decide, hey, this is something we've thought was going to, because you can't be alone. in being in an environment, a political environment, where there's only one main source of news, and that one main source is committed to one particular viewpoint and pushes that one particular viewpoint continually and continuously. And it's irksome sometimes for a lot of people. And they may often think, we'd love to do what you guys did and get together and do something which actually has legs and is sustainable and works. And I mean, the big plus too is that you've got that reach across the world. Yeah. So you're not, it's important to talk to Arcadians, obviously, but you have that extensive reach. So you're reaching sort of people who have become Arcadians through their contact with the Orkney News. And I think that's tremendous, I have to say. Sparing your blushes, I think you guys...
People across the world are interested in Scotland, you know. They're interested in our history, in our archaeology, and also what's going on just now. There is a worldwide reach out there. There is that readership.
And do these people write to you as well as accessing the site? Do they actually say, this is how I feel about what your content is or whatever? Do they get in touch?
There was a Canadian gentleman that we've used several of his poems. He sent us his poems. You'll get comments. You'll get people that have decided to come and visit Orkney because of stuff they've read in our thing. Anything you print about Robert Burns will do really well, by the way. But interestingly, you know, not long after we started, we covered a Trump, it's an anti-Trump rally outside our cathedral. And that got our viewing figures right up in America because they were making comments like, my goodness, look, even folk in Orkney are getting what's wrong with Trump because, when we covered that, it was a candlelit vigil type thing. So just now we're doing the Black Lives Matter type thing and we're covering Orkney's links with slavery, which has caused a bit of disquiet among some people because they don't like to look at that. They like to think of Scarabree and dancing around standing stones, but they don't like the whole history of Orkney, which includes some rather unsavoury things as well.
You mean that Arcadians were slave owners?
We've got, you can look up our article, Orkney and Slavery, and you'll get the ones that owned slaves, the ones that went out to work in plantations. There's another one about Orkney's links with West Africa, which was where, of course, a lot of the slaves were transported from.
Yeah.
And we've got another one coming up soon as well on a similar theme. But these are all kind of issues that are really important that people don't want to look at because it makes them uncomfortable. It's not the image of Orkney they want, but they need to be more mature and grown up about this. And, you know, this is all part of our history. This is all part of who we are. So let's look at this. You know, it's not who we are now, but, you know, we have to admit this happened in the past. And, you know, we've got a Dundas Street, you know, places like that in Orkney as well. So, yeah, let's look at these things and admit, like, that's what happened. And be honest about it.
Well, as the old saying goes, Fiona, and you know it as well as I do, that if you don't learn from history, you're condemned to relive it.
That's right, yeah.
And so it is important. It's also important to get it accurate because a lot of the history that's taught in school, well, certainly I'm speaking personally now, was, in my case, was deeply flawed because it contained no information of that kind at all. It was a slavery-free area in many respects, except for a passing reference to Wilberforce. That there was little information about the enormous sums of money that were paid, not to the slaves, but to the owners by way of compensation, which is...
I had the good fortune to have a father that, when I was wee, would take you about Edinburgh and Leith, because he was a Leither. And he would tell you about the streets and why they were so-called named the way they were and all the rest of it. And, you know, the little tales to do with that. And so I knew about all these persons in Edinburgh and the connections from a very early age. And then what I didn't know, I would go to a library and look up, because public libraries, fantastic places for folk to be able to access information.
Yeah, I agree. And long may they continue. We're almost at the end of our time, Fiona. Is there any message you'd like to give to the people watching and listening from Orkney?
Well, I'd like to thank people for listening in. And you would see we did get some sunshine there, which was lovely. And in better times, I hope you'll be able to visit us and come to understand the islands and love them the way the people here do.
That's a terrific way to end. A big thank you to you, Fiona, for giving up your time tonight. It's been very enlightening. I've enjoyed it immensely, and I'm sure others have too. A big thank you also to all of you out there for joining us tonight. I hope you've enjoyed the TNT show. Again, we have a formidable list of guests lined up for future shows. Martin Day, MP, joins us next week. He'll tell us all about the dark deeds and misdeeds at Westminster and so much else besides, I'm sure. Please don't miss it. Join us next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for, again, what promises to be an exciting show. Oh, and look out for the Constitution column in the Sunday National this weekend. It is pretty heavy stuff. After warning in advance, I begin it by issuing a health warning. But the headline, look out for it, unless the editor changes it, is Nightmare on Downing Street. Read all about it on Sunday. And very importantly, and this is hugely important, please, support Indie Live and Indie Live Radio. New voices for a new Scotland and for all the news that you're not getting from elsewhere. And if you like the TNT show, The Nation Talks, then send a donation to Indie Live. Do it now if you can. Oh, and I should mention before we go, my offer to the BBC to give them a full hour to explain themselves and how they feel they are addressing the needs of Scotland. That's still on the table. Anyone from the BBC can come along at any time and we'll give them a full 60 minutes to explain why Scots ought to trust their output. Again, thanks for joining us and look forward to seeing you next Tuesday. And remember, it's a great day for British democracy. Good night, all.
This is a new voice for a new Scotland.